April 21st, 2011, Steve Gerwick, Gerwick.net, special interview time. And at this time, I'd like to welcome a former WCW wrestler and a former WWF, multiple-time tag team champion. Tonight, I give you Chuck Palumbo. How you doing tonight, Chuck?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
We're doing outstanding tonight, and it's a pleasure to talk to you. As I was telling you offline, you've had a very interesting career. You got a lot of interesting tidbits to get into about your career. But before we do that, before we talk about your in-ring career, why don't you kind of update the fans what's currently going on with Chuck Palumbo and what you're currently involved with?
Well, first of all, Steve, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Let's see. I got a lot of stuff going on. It's funny. I never thought I'd be this busy after after I pretty much finished with wrestling. But, yeah, I got the bike shop, cpcustoms.com. That's my bike shop in San Diego, so that's been we've been slammed, which has been good. We do one-off custom choppers, street bikes, hot rods, fabrication, you know, paint, all custom stuff. And then so that's going good. Then I got a gym. I decided to do a spin off my shop and do a gym. It's called Chuck Palumbo's Garage Gym. It's basically an old school garage style industrial looking gym with all the latest technology as far as training goes, you know, core training and all the stuff they're doing now. You know, we deem it like the shops, so there's motorcycles and parts and guitars and that's that with the gym. And then, you know, I'm playing two bands, play rock guitar in two bands. Virus, so virus.com. We're going to tour coming up soon, hopefully. Just started getting our radio airplay. And I also play local in a band called Three Spoke Wheel, which is basically a classic rock blues cover band, just to keep my chops up on guitar. And, that's it. Actually, there's something I'm nuts, but now that I mentioned it, I just finished a documentary on a motorcycle. I rode a motorcycle across country that I built to raise money for fallen soldiers after my younger brother, in 2009, came back from Iraq and shot down. He lived, but his helicopter was shot down, and he was able to talk about it and tell the story, and I wanted to just raise awareness to, you know, people here in the States and around the world about these kids coming back from the war with injuries and stuff. They don't really get the help they deserve, you know. So we rode the bike. We raffled off tickets. We gave the bike away, and we made a documentary movie as we were doing it. So it's taken 3 years to edit it.
That sounds cool.
You know, that's the soundtrack done. Yeah, it's a good deal, you know.
That's outstanding, and I believe you
I just rambled. That was a long ramble, wasn't it? I'm sorry, man.
That's okay, Chuck. We want you to talk. You know, you can say whatever you want here. So,
yeah. Well, I got a lot going on anyway. But hopefully that movie should be out. We're pitching it now to some networks, so I'm hoping in about another month, 6 weeks, I'll kind of find out where it's going. But that's it. I'm having fun, you know.
I want to ask you. You're talking about your brother in the military, and I believe you also served in the military. Correct?
I did.
That correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Marine Corps.
Navy.
Oh, Navy, okay.
Aircraft carrier, yeah.
Okay, I want to say up front, and I appreciate the work you do for the veterans, because we sometimes glorify the athletes. We glorify sports figures and professional wrestlers and music entertainers, but the real heroes in life are the soldiers, and I applaud you, and I thank you for your service, and I thank you, your brother as well, for his dedication and service to this country, because, you guys are the true heroes, and anything that anybody can do, you know, USO, you reach out for the. I know another interview you were talking. You know, some of these guys come back and they don't have anything but their dog tags and whatever you can do for them. You know,
That happened. But you know, these kids come back with injuries. You know, people day to day take it for granted. You know, when you can walk and talk and move around on your own 2 feet, you take it for granted. You know, going up the stairs, getting in the bathroom, taking a shower, getting in your bed. You know, these are the things that these kids, you know, grown men, grown women in wheelchairs, they can't do. So, you know, the money went to a good cause foundation. You know, they build wheelchair access ramps. They widen the doors to the handicap bathrooms. You know, stuff like that. So it was a good deal. Felt good. You know, these guys deserve it, you know.
And how's your brother doing?
He's doing great. He's actually just got transferred over to Korea.
Okay.
He's flying fixed-wing airplane now. He got out of the choppers, but he's a career man. He's doing good. He's got two beautiful sons and a wonderful wife.
Like I said, we appreciate your service. Any servicemen out there, we do appreciate your service and dedication. So, yeah, definitely. Let's go back a little bit, Chuck. Let's go and look at your career. As I said, a very interesting career. Let's go all the way back to the power plant. And I was listening to you were talking in another interview. You were talking that it was a very physical training at the power plant. Jody Hamilton was there, the assassin. Right. You didn't learn a lot of ring psychology, and that was exactly what I was talking to Johnny Stamboli, Johnny the Bull, earlier. He was saying the same thing. So once you kind of got that physical training, how did you develop learning psychology?
Well, you know, it took a while because, you know, like anybody knows, the boys know, you got to work in front of people with an experienced guy, you know, and, you know, get him to lead you around until you get comfortable in there and learn how to get these reactions out of his fans, his people. But, we would do indie shots on the weekends in the southern states, you know, the southeast states, Arkansas, Alabama, Georgia, you know, North Florida, stuff like that. And then, you know, basically I had to learn pretty much, well, you know, I had a stint in Japan. After the power plant, they sent me to New Japan. I got a crash course over there just because, you know, you're working every night on the road. And then I came back, and pretty much I had to learn on TV as I went along, you know. We just didn't have the territories that the guys before us had, you know, in the 60s and 70s where they were on the road every night in their car and, you know, and learning how to work. So, yeah, we were in great shape, looked great, you know, I guess, as athletes and stuff like that, but... Yeah, we didn't know what we were doing for a while. You know, it took time.
Yeah, looking back, obviously WWE has developmental territories. They actually had more developmental territories back when you first came up. I think it would have been real interesting if WCW would have had a developmental territory to send some of the guys to get some work. And as you said, you literally learned to wrestle on television, which is very difficult to do.
I did. Well, the thing is, with television, you remember now, these matches anywhere from 3 to 10 minutes, you know? So there's not a lot of time, you know. You do a house show, an indie shot with an experienced veteran, and, you know, he can have you out there for 20 minutes and teach you a thing or two, you know? So, you know, TV matches are always structured way different than a house show match. So, you know, a lot of the guys on TV, you know, hardly ever get to learn how to work, you know? Because, you know, TV matches, you really don't learn how to work, you know? Yeah, we learned as we went along, you know.
Talk about the original tryout. I believe when you tried out, there was also a very green wrestler named Dave Bautista that also tried out.
Yeah, Dave, I had already, if I remember correctly, I had just made it through my tryout. He came down like a couple weeks later, and, you know, obviously basically what happened was the trainers over there, they would make the guys who had already made it, they'd make them, you know, go through the same crap again with these guys who they're trying out. And, Dave came in. He was huge at that time, just like probably 350 pounds. I mean, just, you know, absurd. And it didn't last too long. Well, obviously, you know, you can't kind of wait around. You can't get to a cardio workout like the ones we were doing, you know, hundreds of, to probably 1,000 squats and hundreds of push-ups and sit-ups and all kinds of drills. And, he didn't last too long. But I was glad to see him when he came back around the development deal with WWE. I was glad, you know, that he was able to break in, you know. We've been friends ever since.
Now, you were talking that, you know, you basically were learning in the ring. You got kind of a crash course in wrestling. And obviously, you kind of count on veteran guys to kind of help you out, show you the ropes, give you pointers. But one guy, I think, in particular, who was not very helpful to you was Lex Luger.
Yeah, Lex, you know, Lex is a character. Lex, at the time, well, you know, bottom line, I'm sure Lex will tell you this, too. Lex really never was a polished worker. You know,
that's for sure.
You know, in wrestling terms, you know. But,
yeah.
But, you know, hey, gonna give it to him another way. I mean, when you come down to it, this is a business. We're in the business to make money. You know, we love what we do, but at the same time, we're in a business to provide for our family, to make money and support ourselves. You know, so I mean, he had a body, and Vince was able to capitalize on that. And hey, you know, he made money. So I mean, I can't knock him for that. But no, he did not help me. I mean, he was all right with me. I mean, you know, at the time, you remember, he's a kid coming in from, you know, power plant, just came back from Japan, and they're telling him to put over this rookie. You know, and it's like, for a veteran like that, sometimes, especially Lex Luger, who at the time was probably the most arrogant people in the world. You know, it's hard for him to swallow. You know.
Yeah.
I heard he's calmed down. I haven't spoken with him, but Scott Steiner is one of my close friends, and he kind of gave me an update on Lex and said Lex has slowed down a lot, calmed down a lot. So that's a good thing, you know.
Now, obviously, you were at WCW when they brought in Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara, and of course, there was a lot of buzz that, you know, these guys were kind of brought in to save the company. They were going to be these creative gurus that could, you know, maybe turn the fortunes around. What was your overall opinion of the job they did in WCW?
Not too bad. I mean, they tried. I mean, you know, they had a tough deal. You remember, not only were they running for the company, they had to convince these veterans who had been there calling their shots for years, they had to convince them to go with these programs, you know? And that's half the battle in itself. When you get, and number one, you can write a story and create a character, but to get these, you know, let's call them salty dogs in the military terms, get these vets who are already, you know, set in their ways to do these new things, it's not easy, you know? Could it have been done better? Well, of course, it could always be done better. Could have been a lot worse, too. Not bad, though. Not bad. I just think their biggest struggle is getting people to get with the program. You know what I mean?
Looking back, was there really a chance to save WCW? I mean, obviously, there were so many different bosses, the power structure, there were so many egos. Was there really a chance to really save WCW at that point?
I think absolutely. Now, you're talking from a financial standpoint? I
sure.
Really can't comment.
Yeah.
I know Todd's made a comment, and I don't really know the numbers.
Okay.
I don't know the numbers. But from what I saw, I think there was a good possibility. But you can't remember Brad. I don't remember Brad's last name, but he was basically ran the whole company over at TNT under Turner. Brad
Siegel?
I think it was Brad Siegel, yeah. You know,
yeah.
He didn't want a wrestling company, you know? He didn't like the wrestling company. He didn't take the wrestling company seriously. And, you know, Brad Siegel is, you know, and Eric Bischoff, you're looking at two opposites, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think if they had been a team, and then we just brought down the chain of command from there, it would have been better. But, you know, at that, you know, like WCW, Eric Bischoff, who was hanging out with the boys, partying with the boys, acting like a rock star. They're blowing all kinds of money, doing all kinds of angles. Some of them shoot, some of them not. They're just having a great time, you know what I mean? I don't think they really took it seriously, you know?
Yeah.
Until money started to get a little tight. I mean, Siegel comes in, he starts looking at the books. You know, they're flying every single guy out, every single piece of talent, they're flying out to every TV. Well, you know what, off the top of your head, you can't use a third of those guys that night. So, I mean, let's get a roster together. Let's figure out who can go to TV so we're not spending, you know, $300,000 on flights that day. You know what I mean?
But right.
Bischoff, you know, I think they did a great job, man. They smoked Vince for a long time, but, you know, I think they just could have been, you know, they back off on the party a little bit, the rock star routine, and let's do some good business, you know?
Now, obviously, you were born, you were part of the Natural Born Thrillers.
Yeah.
And you did a feud with the Millionaires Club, and obviously you were talking that, you know, Vince Russo had to convince the veterans of kind of put you guys over. Was there anybody in that group, in the Millionaires group, that helped you out that was maybe willing to do some business with the Natural Born Thrillers?
Let's see, the Millionaires group. Now, what was the roster there? Now we had what, Flair?
DDP.
Yep. Was Nash in there?
I think Nash was in that group, yeah.
All right, well, Paige, all right, let's see, we'll start with, gosh, I don't remember. I think we worked a lot with Nash and Paige, if I remember correctly, and they were cool, man. They were cool. They were helping us out and working with us and trying to get it done.
Sting was in that group. Sting and Scott Hall was in that group, I believe, as well. Oh, Sid Vicious?
I don't remember. I just remember working with Paige and Ken a lot, and they were cool. Everything was cool with them, and at the time, Hall was he was battling some personal issues. I think he was not working with the company at the time. They had him sitting at home.
Booker T.
He was all right. Booker T was all right. I don't really remember anybody being a real hassle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's tough. But guys like Booker T, I think, you know, Booker T was not a top guy, but he was going to be one someday. He was in that, like, you know, he was fighting for his spot and working hard. And, it's sometimes hard for guys like that to probably, you know, look at these green guys coming in, you know, especially put them over whatever the case is. But the guys who were already had made it and were on top, they were pretty cool. I don't remember anybody really sticking out being a total dick, you know.
Yeah. I looked at the roster of the Natural Born Thrillers. I know Jindrak is currently wrestling in Mexico, I believe.
Right.
Sean O'Hara, I think, did some mixed martial arts. Is that correct?
I think he made an attempt.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You notice I said he did some MMA, you know?
Yeah. He's a cool cat, and I don't know what he's doing now. I think he's probably MMA, but I don't know.
Yeah, one guy that they ask me a lot from time to time, like in emails and Twitter, and whatever happened to Mike Sanders?
Funny you ask. I had a show up at the House of Blues in Hollywood a couple weeks ago, and he was actually, he came by and said hi. He does stand-up.
Oh, okay.
He's stand-up comics, so he was working outside of L.A., somewhere in that suburb of L.A. Anyway, he's doing that, and I think he's doing indie shots, you know?
Okay.
He's still got to rest a little bit.
And the other guy I didn't know his whereabouts was Reno.
That's another, ironically enough, Reno called me yesterday. He's actually down in San Diego from Vegas and with his family, so he's going to come by and visit. But, yeah, he lives in Vegas, and he's a good dude. He's a good dude.
What was your reaction when Vince McMahon bought WCW?
Well, you know, initially it was kind of dumbfounded, but at the same time, we kind of heard it was coming. But again, surprised, yeah, but I just thought it was such a poor business move, you know? I mean, competition creates success, you know? And I don't think anybody knows it better than Vince, and I think his greed and ego maybe got a tad bit ahead of him, and, you know, they buy the company and basically just bury it, you know? I think greed and ego might have, you know, kind of overpowered his sense of judgment, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still think to this day, if WCW financially was able to float a little longer, I think they could have worked it out. You know, I think it would have made better business for both sides. You know, obviously, I mean, you've seen the industry has taken a huge downfall since those days, you know?
Yeah, it's been 10 years since Vince bought WCW, and look where we are today.
I mean, it's not like it used to be.
No, not
it's
at all.
Bad. Man, I feel they're not a knock on the boys. Let's get this right. It's just not the business is hurting. You know, I mean, I know we've had to change our demographics because of the MMA. MMA has been wonderful. It's a great thing, but it doesn't create competition for sports entertainment. They're two different businesses. You know.
You know, there were rumors before Vince bought WCW that Eric Bischoff had a group called Fusion Media Ventures that they were gonna.
Right.
that they were going to get a group together and buy WCW. Do you have any idea what really happened there? How come they didn't?
You know, I don't know if any facts on that. I just know it didn't happen. We were hoping it happened.
Yeah.
It would happen, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, we were hoping it was going to happen. I mean, I think if someone, you know, I think if someone could have, you know, backed more financially, you know, could have worked it out. Then again, you know, you remember, wrestling is a crazy business, and most companies, most outfits, most corporations, most individual wealthy people or businessmen, 9 times out of 10, are probably not going to sink their money into a wrestling business. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's wrestling business. It's I hate to say it, but it's a lot of times it's considered borderline. And this is, you know, I'm not knocking on anybody. I'm just saying, you know, it's been stereotyped borderline like a carnival, you know? And a lot of people don't take it seriously, you know?
Yeah.
It would have been tough, you know? It's too bad, but it would have been tough, you know?
Talk about the lifestyle change going from WCW, where I believe they would pay for your flights, they would pay for your hotel, your rental cars, and then going to Vince McMahon, where all of a sudden you're paying out of pocket for all those expenses.
Right. You know, it's funny. You know, the boys, you know, because, you know, we're friends with the guys up there. We're all wrestlers, you know, so WCW guys knew WWF guys, vice versa. The WWF guys at the time were so, I mean, I feel like some of them, not all of them, but some of them were so brainwashed, you know, when Vince kind of created this battle from WCW to WWF, it's like, whoa, wait a minute, guys. Don't knock each other. You guys, you know, you guys are the boys. You guys should be sticking together. They're the businesses, you know what I mean? Let's keep this smart. But sometimes these guys actually, you know, were defending their companies, and I'm going, Jesus Christ, you guys get wrong. Anyway, that's just my thought. Yeah, you know, WWF guys told us, hey, it's way better up here. Money's better. This is better. That's better. Treatment's better. No separate locker rooms for the big top guys. You know what I mean? Everybody's treated the same. You know, that whole, you know, that BS, you know? So, you know, some of these WCW guys are looking up there going, oh, we can't, you know, cash a deal on the other side, you know, when we go to Vince. Oh, Christ, when it all got said and done, Vince paid way less, you know, on average. You know, I'm sure he's paying his top guys, but on average, paying way less, not paying for hotels, no rental cars, nothing like that. A lot of people say, hey, listen, you're a wrestler. This is how we do it. Back in the day, we had to do it this way. Well, guys, listen, let's take this out. We're wrestlers, but we want to be considered pro athletes and pro entertainers. Let's get treated like them, too, if we're working hard, you know? Get pro football, get baseball, get basketball. I mean, wrestling's obviously the blue-collar industry, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So anyway, yeah, it was actually, as far as, you know, financially, it was worse for me when I got to WWE. Mostly everybody, you know?
How did you learn, because Vince purchased WCW. He bought some of the contracts, and some of them he was going to let AOL Time Warner, you know, pay out. How did you learn of your fate, and what did they tell you once they told you that you were, you know, part of the WWE roster?
Not too much. I mean, I think I learned my fate almost instantly. I think JR, well, I can't think of JR. I said, oh, you know, we're bringing over. I said, oh, great, it's cool. At the time, I was just getting in it, so I wasn't even really concerned, you know. I was just thinking, wow, this could be exciting if it happens, you know. As far as, you know, going to a new place, you know. I had to look at it that way. It couldn't be negative on that, you know. They didn't really tell me anything. I don't think they knew. When I say they, you know, Vince, maybe, you know, the Briscoes, the Pat Pattersons, the guys like that. I don't think they knew what to do yet. You know, I think that was like a kind of learn as you go along, OJT, you know, on training deal, you know.
Because when they took some of the mid-level contracts or some of the lower-level contracts, some of the guys were sent to Les Thatcher in Cincinnati.
OVW or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, you were, did they send you there first?
Cross.
Okay.
Yeah, I was able to go Red Cross. I didn't have to go to OVW. Unfortunately, they felt I had enough experience to, you know, move across. Did I? Maybe borderline at the time. But you know, to take it along, working with Billy Gunn and some other veterans to, you know, just to get up to speed. But yeah, it's interesting, you know. I see WCW guys, former WCW guys, look back now and go, God damn, WCW was so much better, you know. They eat their words, so they make you laugh sometimes. But yeah, it is what it is.
Now, of course, they put you into the invasion angle.
Right.
Obviously, we know what happened with the invasion angle. They weren't going to put the WCW guys over the WWE guys.
No, and it wasn't, you know, that never really bothered me. What bothered me was, I'm thinking, as a producer, or even, you know, Vince or whoever in WWF at the time, why would you go ahead and bury talent that you're bringing in and you're paying? Why would you bury them? Why don't you rub them with these WWF guys, rub them, bond them, and have them generate more income for you? I think the ego might have gotten in the way, and you buried and killed off a lot of good talent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes, maybe he didn't develop, you know, the Scott Steiner or the Booker T or whoever. Or, you know, at the time I was a low-card guy or a Chuck Lumber, right? Maybe he didn't develop us. But look, take that. The character's already there. Rub it against one of your top guys. Rub it with some of your mid-cards, you know? I think fans would have much rather seen a bonding between companies than an internal battle, you know what I mean? But that's just my opinion on that one. I don't know.
I thought that invasion angle had so much momentum. I think if they would have, when they bought WCW, if they would have picked up Booker T, if they would have picked up Ric Flair, if they would have picked up Eric Bischoff,
right,
they would have, you know, all the top-level guys that were currently there, and then they did the invasion with these top guys coming in to take over. I thought they had so much money potential in that
right,
feud, and they just said, hey, we're just going to bury WCW. And
yeah,
so
it's
a dead brand now, you know?
To me, that's cutting your nose off to spite your face, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. And nothing personal. Really. I try to whenever I've worked with Vince or just any of these wrestling companies, I've always tried to put myself in their shoes and think, you know, as a businessman, and say, you know, what's the reason behind this? You know, I never take it personally. So and it confuses me because I thought there's been a lot of poor decisions made, but I don't know.
I agree with you. I mean, if I'm buying WCW and I'm bringing in these talents,
right,
I want them to make money for me.
Right.
So why not put them over?
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
I mean, you bring in WCW, right? You get the talent there already. You have storylines that you know that were already kind of there. You have foundations for storylines. You have history, let's say, within the character. And on top of that, you got logos. You got stage setup. You got trucks, you got, you know, equipment, you got employees. Now, you go ahead and you bury the company, you shut the company down. Now, we're going to start all over. You're going to start a brand within a brand? Okay, well, number one, that doesn't work. We found that out. People just don't. If you're in the WWF or WWE, you're in the WWE. If you're on SmackDown or Raw, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? There's no competition there, I believe. On top of that, now you're going to go ahead and put that logo on every single truck, on every single ring mat, on every single piece of equipment, you know, new stage setup. I mean, God, they had a running company. Why would you shut down a running company? You know, why would you buy a running company and shut down? That's like, you know, that's like, I don't know.
I think
buying a sandwich and throwing it out the window, I'll get it, you know?
I think the original idea was that when Vince bought WCW, he was going to keep it as a separate show.
No, I assume so. But,
and then he couldn't get the television slot because obviously Turner, Jamie Kellner, said, "Hey, we don't want any more wrestling on Turner, so you're gone."
Right.
So here you get the company for $5 million and you get all the video library for dirt cheap,
right,
you know?
Right.
So,
but probably no chances. I mean, what about getting on another network? You know, I don't know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's it's one of those things that just kind of scratch your head looking back. And I remember the Invasion pay-per-view, and it was so hot, and I'm thinking, man, they could make so much. This could be going on for years, this Invasion angle. And within a couple months, it was done, you know?
I think, you know, and I might be wrong, but I think, like I said, I didn't see the numbers. I didn't know what Vince was thinking from the business side in his head. I don't know what his dollar signs were telling him, but I do know from a wrestling standpoint, I thought it was an egotistical decision, you know.
Yeah, definitely generated a lot of interest in the business for sure.
Yeah.
After that, they teamed you up with Billy Gunn, obviously.
Yeah.
Billy and Chuck tag team, and as I understand it, the Billy and Chuck team was kind of just a joke at first, and then it just kind of took off from there.
Yeah, it was funny. One day, because of American Airlines Arena over in Dallas, and Hunter comes up to me and says, "You're bleaching your hair today," and this and that. I started going off about the gimmick a little bit, and I kind of was like, "What are you talking about? You'll find out," because I guess he was at the meeting, you know. And, I guess Sarge, maybe Patterson, I can't remember the other guys. I know Sarge had something to do with it. They were all in the meeting with Vince, you know, the pre-meetings they had before TV. Decided they were going to do that character, and it was kind of in a half, excuse my French, ass joke way. And I don't think anybody knew what to expect, and it kicked off, you know?
Yeah, how did you like doing that gimmick? Obviously, they pushed the gay button as hard as they could,
right.
And they got all kinds of hate from the gay and lesbian groups.
Yeah.
How did you feel about doing that particular gimmick?
Remember from a business standpoint, Vince had this all times. You know, you got TV cable ratings week, right?
Yep.
He wants to draw numbers that night. So he plots out this, you know, edgy, because it's an edgy character, you know. He plots his character out, this character's Billy and Chuck, and he times it just right, so this final wedding or partner's life ceremony is going to be on TV ratings night, you know? So, I mean, from a business standpoint, I saw what he was doing there. As a character standpoint for myself, I just ran with it, man. I mean, you know, I'm not gay. I got nothing against it, though. Whatever, you know what I mean? I mean, it's the biggest Saturday Night Live. After shows, gay jokes, you know what I mean? It's just...
Yeah.
So, you know, something, I'm going to get this opportunity. I'm going to make some good money. Let's run with it. I'll do my best I can do with it. And then just go from there, you know? Guy can tell me, oh, it's going to run me crazy. It's going to do this and do that. It's like, come on, you know?
I mean, it was successful. I mean, you were at WrestleMania, what, 18?
Yeah, 17. I think it was 17. Yeah, it was...
in Toronto.
Yeah, we made good money, man. We made good money and built my foundation, you know. And, you know, wrestled some big names. Sure, I get to wrestle Hulk, you know. It's like, I've only been in the business 4 or 5 years. It's like, you know, we get some good media exposure. You know, Howard Stern and... Today Show, and you know, they put it in Time Magazine. It was like, it was good exposure, man. I thought it was, I had a blast with it, you know.
Now, one aspect I did like was they brought in Rico as your stylist.
Yeah.
And I really,
that, right?
I liked him. I thought he had a lot of charisma and was like a natural type of manager.
Yeah.
Why do you think he didn't ultimately make it in WWE?
I was political, you know. He's a sick kid, a lot of talent.
Very talented guy.
Talent.
Yeah.
Yeah, just political. I mean, 9.9 times out of 10, if there's someone's got talent and he doesn't make it in the business, it's political. And then you know, next step down, maybe personal problems, you know, drugs or whatever. And then third might be, you know, attitude and stuff like that. But you know. 9 times out of 10, if he's the guy who's got the potential to be a top guy, it's just political, you know.
Now, I only can assume that when you were doing the Billy and Chuck thing, that you must have got ribbed by the boys a lot for doing a character like that.
Yeah, a little bit. Not too bad, you know, a little bit. Bradshaw used to rib a little bit. At the time, he was still in his little bully stage. He would rib a little bit, I think, maybe, you know. We were just having fun with it. A couple other guys, but nothing too bad, you know. Believe it or not, a lot of the guys were like, damn, son, you guys are turning a rib into a hell of a gimmick, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, then like, you know, Eddie, I was close with Eddie Guerrero, and, you know, he wanted to work with us, you know? So some of these top guys are up and coming strong talents, wanting to work with us. So it was, thought it was great.
Now, after Billy and Chuck, they put you with the full-blooded Italians.
Yeah.
With Nunzio and Johnny Stamboli, Johnny the Bull.
Yeah.
Obviously, a totally different direction. Did you like that sort of change? Did you think it was a kind of a natural progression from there?
Yeah. Well, you know, what happened was the way it came out, man, Vince came up to me one day and said, you know, what do you want to do? We want to do something with you. You know, I think you're a talented guy. Billy and Chuck angle is over, you know, and... you know, he asked what I was into and a little bit about myself, a little more about myself. And somehow the Italian-American thing came about, and I told him, I said, I could pull it off pretty well. You know, I grew up in Providence, Rhode Island. It's, you know, an Italian community, so it's not a far stretch. But, you know, Steph was actually what I wanted to do. So I kind of swayed towards doing something like mafioso style type of deal. And I think Steph had mentioned, you know, well, we, you know, maybe start some kind of FBI thing or something. You know, none of the time we're going to get Johnny Bull. That's just going to be fun. And then we started to pack up. So that was it. I had a good time with that too. But I thought, you know, it's funny. I thought that gimmick for us three was strong. I mean, we were starting to get, I felt we were getting some legitimate heat for a little while. Well, legitimate heat. Legitimate heat for 2004, whatever it is. But at that time, I thought we were getting some pretty good heat. I think I thought it was a great deal, you know?
Yeah, they have the draft currently coming up in WWE, and, of course, you had a couple of times been switched from Raw to SmackDown, from SmackDown
right.
to Raw. Is there really a perception that, you know, obviously Raw is the A show, so is there kind of a feeling if you go from Raw to SmackDown, it's kind of like a demotion in the company?
You know, it's funny, is I still believe to this day that some of the boys believe that. I don't know. I'll tell you what. It's pretty easy to figure it out. It's like, look at the guys that are on Raw and look at the guys on SmackDown. The guys who are, I believe, are a little closer to the office. And when I say office, I mean, you know, people, you know the term office, right, in wrestling, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I believe that all the thing is, I think that the people who are closer to the office are on Raw. You know, that's all I believe. As far as talent, who's better? No. I mean, I think guys that are maybe just a little more into, you know, the office are on Raw. That's all it is. I think the talent's equal. I just think that the people who are a little more into it, aside from being in the ring, like, I think, you know, SmackDown, you got more boys who are just solid workers, great talent. They want to go to work, have a great match, be one of the boys, and go home. You know what I mean?
Right.
Work hard, play hard. I think a lot of the guys on the floor all want to talk to the ladies for 2 hours before the match, make sure the match goes the way they want it, talk to the ladies after the match. Put the Michael Hayes over here. Put the Joe over there. Figure this out. Hey, what do you do? You know, pitching more ideas. Gets more, you know, more, you know, stuff like that. I don't know if I'm making sense.
Sure.
I'm making sense.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I don't know if anybody's ever described it that way, but I believe that's the deal.
In November of 2004, they let you go. They released you.
Yeah.
What did they tell you? I mean, how did you learn of your release, and what did they tell you at that time?
Yeah. Ace called me, Laurinaitis, you know, and he just basically told me, hey, you know, Reddit's have nothing for you. We're going to let you go, something like that. Not using you enough, but, you know, can't afford to pay what we're paying you. At the time, I don't even think I was making that much money. I think about 125 grand a year, I think, or 100 grand a year, you know, for my downside. It was, you know,
right.
It was like, okay, you know. They get a really piss poor way about doing things like that. But I have a funny feeling, you know, it was just, you know, it's, politically, like, you know, I didn't have anybody in my corner, you know. A lot of guys don't. You know, only a few do. So it's like, I'm not the guy to go and, you know, I don't kiss too much ass, you know what I mean, man? Like, I see a lot of guys kissing the ladies' asses and kissing this guy and that. I just feel, you know, I'll work as hard as I can for you. Give me something to do, and I'll do it, you know. I'll do it to the best of my ability. I think I proved that at the Billy and Chuck thing.
Yeah.
Do it, you know?
Yeah, I don't know how many people would want to do basically,
you know what I mean?
openly homosexual character.
Right.
You know, I mean,
whatever. Yeah, exactly. I did it. You know, to make me more successful and prove to the company that I could, you know, make it work.
Not only do it, but pull it off. That it's successful,
yeah,
and people are buying it. You know,
I thought so, but you know, obviously, you know, a lot of times they don't agree. But I never took it personal. It's a business. They want to release me, they release me. I know what I have. I know what I'm worth. I know what I'm capable of doing. But, you know.
Now, when I always think Billy the Chuck, I always think of the theme song. And it's like one of those things. It's one of those songs that gets kind of stuck in your head and you just can't forget about it.
Oh, I know.
Who did that song?
Backstreet Boys. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know, but it sounded like, you know, that. I don't know. You know, Vince has Michael Johnson.
Jim Johnson.
Jim Johnson. And, you know, Jim brings guys in and comes up and stuff. But, yeah, it was classic. But, you know, it's funny to fit the deal, man. If it was so absurd, so just, like, disgustingly, you know, I don't know, just disgusting. It was funny, you know? I mean, we come down the ring in bathrobes. Not silk pajama robes, but, you know, terry cloth bathrobes and you know, bleach hair and headbands. And we're all tanned up, looking cheesy with white teeth and blonde hair. And it's just brutal, you know? But just, it all worked. It was all just absurd and just over the top. And it all flowed, you know?
What was your reaction when the gay and lesbian groups kind of, you know, made a fuss of what they were doing? They didn't quite understand it was just entertainement, right?
Well, you know, if you remember, up until the point that we came out and said we weren't gay, they were loving us. I mean, we're at the Today Show, and you know, with King Curry and the other guy, Matt Lauer, and we're receiving gifts from the GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Activist Group, whatever it is. We're getting gifts. You know, they're sending us plates and home, you know, fortune knives, you know, all that stuff. Figuring we get married, you know, to deco our house and stuff. It was crazy. It was absurd. And then the minute that Vince, you know, that we came out and we pulled that little switch, you know, they were pissed. You know, it was a mockery of it and blah, blah, blah. Hey, man, that's entertainment, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Did you mislead them a little bit? Absolutely. Oh, well, you know.
After WWE released you in 2004, you went to Japan.
Yeah.
Talk about your experiences over there, and obviously how does that differ from obviously working in the United States?
Yeah. Japan, number one, from a wrestling standpoint, a little more physical, a little stiffer, a little less entertainment, a little more wrestling. You know, typical Japan. I'm sure you've heard it. Potatoes,
yeah.
Stiff kicks, and heavy chops. But, you know, I loved it over there. I had a blast. The Japanese guys are great. Fans took a liking to me, thank God. So it was good, and I fit right in over there. Man, I should have stayed. At that time, I should have stayed longer. But I was out there doing a show, and I was doing well. And I think, Vince's group was in town. And, you know, Taker and Ray came over, good friends of mine, and they were, they want, you know, Vince wants to know, want to come back, or Johnny Ace wants to know if you want to come back, or something like that, or whatever. And, you know, I just, at the time, I was still young, I'm going, yeah, I want to hang out with my friends, and, you know what I mean, be in the States, you know. When you're a wrestler, I mean, your ultimate goal is to, you know, draw money in the States, I think, you know. And I said, sure, let me go back and do another shot. But I had, you know, had a couple shots in Mexico City after that, so I did those and came back to a SmackDown. But, I made a mistake. I might have made a mistake there, you know. Who can say now, but I was doing very well in Japan, making good money. And I think I could probably finish my career there, you know.
Yeah, I was gonna say that I was wondering what the payouts were because – they do, what 3-week tours, and you can come home for a while, and it's
kind of... Yeah, payout's pretty good, better than in the States. Now they're not. Payout's nowhere for any guy. I don't care where you work, any company, right? No one's getting paid well except some of the top guys. But, payout was better in Japan. But, you know, I figured, hey, listen, maybe I get another run in with Vince and see what happens. You know what I mean?
They brought you back, and then they moved you from SmackDown to Raw in a supplemental draft, and then you kind of disappeared.
Yeah, well, you know, it was going strong. They gave me a solid push, what I felt was a solid push for someone at my level, and it was going well. But
because you were working with Michelle McCool at that time, right?
Yeah. Vince loved the gimmick, and
the biker gimmick.
I noticed he loved it. You know what happened was I had built the motorcycle, it wound up on the cover of a magazine. Vince saw it. I showed it to him. He said, hell, it's a good idea to do the gimmick, you know? People say, oh, it's a spinoff of The Undertaker. Blah, blah, blah. I'm not The Undertaker, you know? So, but it was working.
But you were working with his wife, so
Yeah, well, it was working the wife at the time, right? But
yeah,
so that's going well, and they give me a little push as a little baby face, and I'm starting to get a good reaction. I'm going, this is working pretty well. But, you know, I'll tell you straight up, what happened was, you know, people got involved, producers got involved and felt that I deserved the push. So that was it, you know. And when the producers underneath the bands, the producers, you know, basically road agent, when they feel you don't deserve the push, they're not going to push for you in the meetings, you know. And so I didn't get to keep going with it. They, Arn Anderson, he wasn't a good, big fan of mine. Every time Vince would push for me, he would say, no, he's not your guy. The thing about Arn is, Arn's a smart guy, and the business knows the business well. He's a talented guy. And, you know, Vince listens to guys like that. He can't blame him. But other guys, you know, I had friends with agents, and they said, Jeff, you know, a couple of these agents just don't want to see you go any further. They think that's your limit. So, I mean, when that happens, there's nothing really you can do, you know. They have me do that heel thing to bury the babyface character quick, have me hit a girl or beat up on a girl. Of course it's going to bury the character quick, you know?
Sure.
And I knew when I started with the twist with the girl thing, and that was Arn's idea, I knew right there, you know, I fought long enough trying to fight. I would have to go to Vince, you know, this, don't let me do this. You know, I don't want to be a crybaby anymore. I said, you know something, what am I doing this for? Here I am trying to work for a company and work my butt up for a company, take bumps for a company that doesn't want to that's going to treat me like this. I was like, this is the beginning of the end, you know? And the money was horrible anyway, so I was like, all right, let's, you know. And then just the way they put me out was the bad part, you know? They released me in a legit way. I would have felt a little better about it, but at the time, I was on a show. I got brought over to Raw, and then I had, you know, my shoulder had been acting up bad. I was getting cortisone injections weekly just to wrestle, so finally, enough's enough to get it fixed. So I went and got it fixed, and I was a couple weeks into rehab, and I got a call from one of the WWE doctors. He told me they wanted, you know, the producers wanted to get me back on the road, and they needed me out there wrestling. And so they asked me if I could get my doctor's release. I just walked out of the rehab, and I said, well, yeah, if they're going to use me, I'll come back. I said, my shoulder's not 100% yet. And they said, well, you can work around me in the ring. I said, yeah, because I was hungry and I want to get out there. I went back in my doctor's office. I had him fax the release. He said, Chuck, you sure you want to do this? You got a few more weeks of rehab for that shoulder. I said, yeah, we're going to work around it. He told me, he strongly advised against it. He said, oh, if you feel you're better, I'll let you go. And he let me go. And then about 4 hours later, I got a call from Johnny Ace. He said, oh, Chuck, I just want to let you know we're going to have to release you. You know, so they openly knew that. They couldn't release me when I'm under doctor's care. So they, you know, they tricked me into getting my release. I fell for it, you know, and they released me a few hours later. That was it.
Do you think overall you're probably done with Vince, or do you think there might be
I don't know. You know, you never say never. The thing is, I was able to, the big thing with wrestlers are, there's always that what if. You know, what if they push me? What if this? And, you know, and the company purposely puts you in that position. They talk about grabbing a brass ring. Well, the only way a few people grab the brass ring. The rest of the people, they let the boys jump for it. They can touch it once in a while, but they never get a good grip on it. Because there's no way Vince is going to pay all his guys top guy pay. There's no way he's going to make them all stars and pay them top guy pay. He needs to have a supporting cast. he may tell the supporting cast every night, hey, listen, you could be the next Shawn Michaels, you could be the next Razor Ramon, you could be the next whoever, next Rock. 9 times out of 10, you're not going to be that guy. You can't pay everybody that amount of money. Let's pay John Cena. Tell him to buy every single muscle car he can. Put him in the magazine with those muscle cars. All it does is entice these guys to work harder to be that guy. I want the cars. I want the house. I want this. I want that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the way the business is done. And, hey, listen, that's what you got to do. It's not. I don't take it personal. But I knew that I had to close that door before I could focus my whole attention on something else, like my bike shop or my gym or my band. You know what I mean? So, you know, the problem is a lot of wrestlers are afraid to close that door. Then there's not, I'll tell you, 99% of those guys are not happy. 100% happy. They're doing what they have to do right now because, like, screw it. I'm back in the world, bust my ass, sacrifice my buyers, I can make some money and get out. Well, the problem is, it's never enough. And then businesses have ups and downs. And next thing you know, they're stuck there for 10 or 15 years. They're all beat up. Like a Ric Flair, you know? You want to be that Ric Flair? It's like, come on. I love the guy, but look at him. He's going to work to pay bills. So, like, yep. Jesus Christ, you know? He's the guy who should have it all reset. I just think it's a tough business, man. You know, and I think now you're not getting the talent because kids are more educated now. Kids are smarter. Kids realize what kind of business it is on the business side of wrestling, you know? And you're not getting the people that want to be wrestlers anymore, you know?
I don't know how you guys do the travel schedule, you know, where you have to... You know, you travel and you go from hotel, flight
right.
to flight, and then you're supposed to eat right, you're supposed to train, and you're supposed to do all this on the road. I mean, it's like insane, you know.
And they wonder why guys turn to drugs and steroids and stuff like that. These guys are taking the plunge. They're in it. Like, shit, I'm gonna sacrifice my family and sacrifice my body. Shit, all right, I'll sacrifice it with the raw steroids, not with the pain pills to get through and make the money. And they justify it by the money. You know, make the money and get out, or make the money for the families. You know what I mean? They justify it as their living. It's a vicious cycle, you know?
Yeah.
That's all. It's just not a healthy business for the mind or body, you know?
Now, obviously, wrestling fans see Vince McMahon, Mr. McMahon on television.
Yeah.
But what is the true Vince? Who is Vince McMahon, and what is he truly like in real life?
Yeah, Vince. He's just a very smart guy. Always thinking, always working, always hustling. Well spoken, knows what he wants, and is able to create a goal and reach it. He's just that guy, you know. But he's business first. Nothing personal. I like this. I tell you, I think shit he does is crazy. I think he's evil at times, but I like it. He's always been cool with me, you know. Whatever. You know?
Now, one of the criticisms that... Yeah. I think it was Road Warrior Hawk I talked to before he passed away. I said, give me one word to describe Vince McMahon, and he said, complex.
Yeah.
I thought that probably sums it up. So.
Yeah, it's one word. Yeah, he is complex.
Yeah, I thought that was probably a very fitting word for him, so, adjective, so.
Yeah, a bit of a narcissist, maybe, I don't know, but he's got it all. But he's successful, he knows what he's doing.
One of the major criticisms I think wrestling fans have for WWE and Vince is that they have entertainment writers come in.
Right.
They have soap opera writers or guys who write for television shows. What's your opinion on that? Some of the guys that come in, do they really know anything about wrestling, or are they kind of learning on the job as well?
Yeah, absolutely not. None of them know anything about wrestling.
Do they have any respect from the boys? I mean, if you come in, they say, "Okay, I'm Steve Gerwick, and I don't know anything about. I used to write a soap opera. Okay, Chuck, this is what I want you to do." And you're like,
"Yeah,
what?
A lot of most of the writers don't have any respect, but you know, it's just horrible deal. Writers." 9 times out of 10, the writers don't know the business, don't know the history of the business. They're trying, you know. They're young kids, and they're hungry, working Hollywood, want to get jobs and write, and, you know, and create characters. But, you know, maybe they should take a lesson in wrestling first, you know.
You actually won a lot of tag titles looking back at your career. But I heard you say one time that, you know, the title victories didn't really mean anything to you. The titles were just props.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is truly the case. A title, you know, just to help rub that guy and enhance his talent. Just like that motorcycle was for me. And, you know, it got a reaction and it enhances the talent, you know. Trust me, no one's winning. None of these matches are shoot, so it's like,
right.
What else could the belt be for? It's like Bret Hart having the sunglasses on. It's part of the character, part of the gimmick. And, on top of that, it's there to enhance. You know, it's like getting in the ring with a top guy. You know, you get that belt around your waist. That means something.
A two-part question. One is, who was your best tag team partner? And then a question comes from our Twitter page is, why don't they push tag teams anymore in wrestling?
Yeah. Well, number one, favorite tag team partner?
Billy
Gunn. Actually, no, I don't know. In the ring, as far as what he taught me, would be Billy Gunn. Let's see. At the time, outside the ring, no. Personally, he was an idiot. At the time, he was crazy.
Yeah.
He was nuts. But, that was at the time. He's a sweetheart of a guy. I love the death. But,
And why don't they
nice
push
guy,
tag team
you know,
wrestling?
I'm sorry, why don't they push tag team wrestling?
Yeah.
Vince has never, ever, ever been a fan of tag team wrestling. He believes the money maker is solely one person. Solely one person. Vince needs that one guy to draw money and bring everybody else behind him, you know?
How does it feel to be in a video game?
Oh, it was flattering, man. It was flattering. what was cool about it for me was I just dug that my daughter could play it with a fan. I thought that was kind of cool for her, you know. And my dad in the game, you know, that kind of thing. But it's kind of flattering, you know.
Extra paycheck for you, right?
Extra paycheck, yeah.
Yeah. What's your thought on the Tough Enough series and finding wrestlers through the Tough Enough series?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I got to go up there. I went there about a month ago for Ray's taping. I'm pretty tight with Steve Austin. He wanted to bring some of my bikes. Literally, he's Harley's for a shoot. Steve said, hey, why don't you bring Chuck's bikes, you know? And I think Ray had something to do with it, too. Ray had mentioned it, too, you know? So the bikes up there going to send the kids and speak to everybody for a while. And I thought it was much better than it had been in the past. Production was 10 times better, just a totally pro deal. And it was much more like a reality show, like the UFC, spin-off the UFC, what's it called, Tough?
The Ultimate Fighter?
Yeah, it's basically like that, you know. They kind of copied that deal. Better budget than in the past, you know. As far as finding talent there, well, that's a tough one, you know. I think maybe they'll find a guy or two. I mean, gosh, hope all will make it. But chances of finding a big handful of talent there might be tough. Just like I said, you know, the kids are just not out there that are into it anymore. I mean, Ultimate Fighter, you're going to have a billion kids who are talented who are going to, you know, make it to the house and make it. But, you know, you go outside in San Diego, we're going to every corner, there's an MMA school. Then, you know, pro wrestling, no friend wrestling school. It's a whole different ballgame, man. You know what I mean? People aren't walking around with pro wrestling tights on like they are with MMA trunks, you know what I mean? That'd be funny.
Are you a fan of MMA?
Oh, big fan. Yeah.
Who's some of your favorite fighters?
Oh, God. Diaz brothers, on top of my head, guys are so entertaining and tough. I just saw Nick Diaz with Strikeforce a couple weeks ago, live, great fight. Diaz brothers, gosh, Liddell was a favorite. Couture, God, Anderson Silva was just so talented.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, Brock, I love Brock to death. He's a character. He's a bull in the China closet out there. He's an animal. And, yeah, he got mopped up a little bit, but I think he's going to come back. Keeps his head in it. The guy's got a lot of talent. He just doesn't have the experience yet. But
Are you surprised by his success in UFC?
Brock's?
Yeah, Brock.
No, not at all. I knew the guy could do that. The guy's hard-nosed, tough. You know, we're talking about an All-American, NCAA Division I All-American. he's a hard worker. Ralph's a hard worker. I mean, a lot of guys don't know. I mean, not that I was hanging out with him every day, but I knew a little bit about him, and he's a hard worker, you know. And I just think, you know, his deal with the business was he's a true blue-collar type of guy and believes what's fair is fair, what's not is not, what's right is right, what's wrong is wrong, cost only myself. And the business wasn't for him, you know. So,
I want to ask you, too, we're getting questions from Twitter about TNA. Is there any interest in going to TNA?
No, not at all. I believe they have no interest in me. I don't think they have any interest in me, but I'm definitely not interested in them at all either. Just, I think what's going on down there is horrible, you know. It's a horrible the talent. It's just rotten. And it's usually just on top of that, the way that, you know, what the paying this book is, it's just crazy.
I was going to ask you, do you currently follow WWE and TNA on television?
WWE, once in a while, you know, I still got a good relationship with those guys, and I talk, I do this interview, man, and I tell you about my feelings about things, but, you know, as a relationship basis, I'm friends with a lot of the boys, and I try to catch up with them once in a while, see what they're doing out there. Ray's a close friend of mine, Chavo, and Dave, well, Dave's not there anymore, but, you know, Steve, so they keep me informed, but the product... I feel the product is suffering, and it's hard to watch at times, you know?
Yeah.
TNA is really, I've never really watched TNA unless like Scotty Steiner's on there or something. TNA is horrible. But yeah. WWE is just, I guess they think right now, man, they're hurting. I wish they were doing better, you know?
Yeah. When Chuck Palumbo goes out in public, are you recognized a lot? Or do they say, hey, Chuck, can I have your autograph? Or how does that work when you're out in public?
I have my days, man. I have my days. Some days, yeah, a whole bunch in one day. Another day, none. Thing with me is I'm big. I'm 6'5", you know what I mean? I'm a big guy.
A little intimidating,
guy.
Maybe?
Well, you know, I'm a big guy with long, crazy, messed up hair. So, I tend to stand out a bit. And then maybe once they see that, oh, wait a minute, aren't you Chuck Palumbo, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But same thing with my town, and I know a lot of people, and so people recognize me that way too. But definitely not a Rock or a Hulk Hogan, you know.
Lastly, Chuck, we want to thank you for doing this interview, and I want to give you an opportunity to plug your motorcycle shop again, and as well
yeah,
as
please.
if anybody wants to get in contact with you, contact you for bookings or personal appearances, or book your music band, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, you can contact me at chuck@cpcustoms.com. CP Customs, Customs being spelled with a K. My Twitter's on there, too. I'm not a big internet guy, but I've been trying to do the Twitter more.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get back to people. I don't big time anybody, and there's nothing big time about this. I'm just a blue-collar guy like everybody else. So let's hit me up on Twitter, and I'll definitely get back to you, you know, and keep your phone with what I'm doing with the band, the shop, at the new gym.
Yeah, we'll definitely we'll plug that on our front page as well. If you want to get in contact with Chuck, book him or book his band. He's definitely accessible.
Yeah, chances of getting me to wrestle probably slim. Probably not going to happen. But if you need a solid band or a motorcycle or something else I can do for you.
Well, you know, Chuck, the other thing is they bring these people in like for legends and conventions, and they bring in all kinds of people, do gimmick tables, and great chance to meet the fans and talk to them. And
yeah, something like that would be cool, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Chuck. Well, I appreciate the time tonight. We've had a great time talking to you. I could probably ask you about a million more questions, but
How long do we go? We went for a while, huh?
Yeah, we're at an hour right now, and we really do appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. It's, you know, I not often do I get to talk to guys who really appreciate wrestling, so I usually don't open up to them. But no, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.